Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi there. Welcome to New Life Live. So very glad that you've joined us today. Joining me, Mylon Yurkovich and Dr. Jill Hubbard. Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, one of my favorite teams.
Yep.
Mine, too. And, you know, this past weekend, I was at another team member's church, Becky Brown. I went over to Beaver Creek, Be Hope Church, preached there. It was so great for all of the worlds of Becky to collide. Church, home, all that.
That could be great. Quite a collision,
and,
too.
Yes,
her energy. She's got so much energy.
What?
My headphones unsnapped here. I'll just put those back in as people are seeing what's going on there. Okay, I'm back. Anyway, if you want to join us today, it's 1-800-229-3000. We'd love to have you join us. And we're going to be in the studio for 2 hours. Now, I want to mention that right now is the last day of our Dollar Days sale on resources. So the books
today really is the last day?
Last day.
I haven't bought yet.
Well, you can still do it.
Okay.
And these aren't just the books that of Mylon and I that don't sell well. These are
or me.
Books that sell great or whatever. So, yeah, great resources there. You can get that at newlife.com or by calling 1-800-NEW-LIFE. And then I want to mention this great, great workshop. It's coming up. I mean, it's just around the corner now. Brains, Boundaries, and Battles, and the Bible. And this is one of these things where you hear the speaker, Dr. Daniel Amen, Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. John Townsend, me, Sheila Walsh. Then you go into a group and you start to deal with those fears you've never dealt with, or the resentment and bitterness. And, you know, we talk about resentment a lot, but we don't talk about regret so much. And boy, that's a huge one. I think regret is linked to shame. We're going to deal with that. I'm going to talk about all the different realms of the power of acceptance. And I love talking about acceptance. Bill Wilson said, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. And whether it's accepting responsibility or accepting forgiveness, whatever, it really is a powerful, powerful concept. And I would love for you to join us. We're just going to do it one time. So you can sign up at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or newlife.com. These are tough times. I don't know if you guys are like me. I was kind of thinking by now we'd be drifting out of the COVID epidemic. But, man, this thing, it's going to be serious here in the winter. And don't lose hope. But this is the time where we say, God did not give us a spirit of fear, nor the spirit of stupidity. And we need to be careful when we're out there. We need to really be careful. I saw a thing. I don't know if you guys saw this, but it said, what we need to do, this is like a thing coming across the internet, is figure out how people are getting infected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. If somebody could say, okay, out of 100 people that got infected, 40% were shopping, you know, or 30% went to the pharmacy or something. If we could just know what are the highest risk areas. Do you guys know that? I mean, I don't know that information.
I don't either, but I did hear today that the second pharmaceutical company now has a vaccine, Moderna, and they're going to have it out and available, I think, in December. So we have two companies now. So
it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. And that's, I mean, We don't have polio because we had a polio vaccine.
That's right.
Yeah, we have to trust that process.
Yeah. Moderna. Moderna or
Derna? Moderna.
Oh.
And Pfizer are the
Pfizer,
two.
Yeah. Oh, Derna. Probably what they say around there when they don't figure it out. We'll be back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Mylon Yurkovich, Dr. Jill Hubbard. I'd love for you to join me today at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Going Deeper. Now, these have been a little bit shorter than when we started, so I may change the name to
They're Going Not As
a little
Deep.
I was going to change the name to Going a Little Bit Deeper. In fact, I was thinking I've got the sign over there, riding across there, Going a Little Bit Deeper. But anyway, we're just starting to do a new series today. But I think if you tune in, you might see the one we're just finishing up, Procrastination. But right now, there is a person that has called us at 1-800. 229-3000. That is the phone number. And let's go to Thomas from Kansas City, Missouri, I assume, and listens on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 131 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you, Thomas, for calling us. How can we help?
Well, thanks, guys, for taking my call. Really appreciate it.
You bet.
Basically, I've got a 12 going on 13-year-old daughter that when she was 7 was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. First couple years, she did a really good job of trying to take care of herself and, you know, stay on top of her health.
Mm-hmm.
And about this last year, though, she's been getting more and more worked up about the fact that type 1 diabetes does not go away. I mean,
yeah.
It's something she's going to have to deal with forever. And it's starting to bother her. And she's starting to not take care of herself, not drink water and stay hydrated like she should be, sneaking food when mom and dad aren't around, stuff like that. And her endocrinologist actually has suggested that we get her into some therapy to help deal with facing this.
Yeah.
And we're trying to find her a therapist, a good Christian-based therapist or counselor. But in the meantime, I'm just kind of curious if you guys have any idea on how I could try to just reach out to her and help her to cope with this.
Yeah. Okay. So glad you called. We'll start with Jill and go to Mylon, and I've got a couple of thoughts here because I am glad that you're going to go the route of getting her some help,
mm-hmm.
and some of that help will certainly help you and how you're going to treat her. But Jill, what are you thinking about this?
You know, I think as she's coming of age where peers are more important and, you know, is becoming a teenager, a little pushback would be expected. And so, you know, instead of maybe getting some rebellion in some other areas, you're getting it in this. Because, you know, I think that realization, like you described, of it hitting her. I mean, I know people in their 80s that come to me and are struggling with accepting limitations in life. So this is a limitation. So early in life, you know, when kids are still idealistic and think they can do anything, she has to contend with a very adult idea of limitations. And so I think that, you know, acceptance piece and, you know, compliance. I mean, and this is something where she can be fairly normal, right? My son has has a friend who is diabetic, and I'm always finding his, you know, diabetes kits that his mom packs up, left at my house, left in the car. You know, this kid is all over the place. It's a hard thing, and I think she's going to have ongoing times of being sad about it, and making room for those feelings, I think, is really important.
You know, I just wanted to say one thing. It's not easy to respond to it appropriately as mm-hmm. a parent, and so I think that's where the therapist can help you. Because,
right.
you know, the temptation is, at least it's not this. But what she needs is is somebody to identify with how absolutely difficult that would be. Milam, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I have a son-in-law who was diagnosed with juvenile onset of diabetes type 1 at 16, and then his daughter, my granddaughter, is type 1 diabetic, and she was diagnosed at 13. She's now 15, or earlier than that, maybe 12. And I think, Thomas, you asked a great question a little while ago. How do I engage with her? How do I reconnect? What do I do? And the number one thing you can do is empathize and ask her what she feels. Jill hit this on the nail on the head here. She said she's probably sad. And then there is peer pressure. And, you know, I know people that they don't want their glucose monitor to be seen. They want to wear the cool little outfit, and they don't want anything bulging out. And then they have, you know, pumps, and that's another bulge. And so there's all this peer pressure, plus to eat or not eat, based upon what her peer group is doing. And just to sit down and you know, Jill's right. The teenage years are the most impulsive of the entire lifetime of a person, because the brain is going through a major reformatting process. And in that reformatting, it's actually getting rid of cells and building adult pathways and getting rid of neuropathways that were childlike. And so it's a very, if you will, the toughest stage right here for you. But to be empathetic first before you try to fix a thing. What else are you feeling? What's it like going to school? Has anybody said anything? How do your teachers respond to you? All those questions are really important. How ashamed are you of this? And those are things that are really important to ask her first. And then be sure to find a therapist that is not just purely cognitive, but somebody can really empathize with her feelings as well.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that I would add, Thomas, is that I think you and your wife also need to monitor your own sense of anxiety and panic, you know, thinking, oh my gosh, she's putting her life at risk here, and wanting to be overly controlling in that way. I think it really does have to be a collaborative partnership with your daughter. In managing that, because you don't want her pushing against, you know, what feels like over control. Not saying you're doing that, just a caution, right? That you could get panicky and she'll feel that.
Well, and as I'm sure you know, Thomas, the glucose monitors these days, you can have an application on your phone that will keep you real time with her blood sugar levels. And I think as a parent, especially when you have an immature 13-year-old, 12 going on 13, that the parents really do need to know what's going on. And but then the empathy piece is important, but then there are standards she has to hold to.
Okay, so I'm glad you called, and I just want to say one more little thing here. I think you need a therapist that isn't, like Milam says, isn't all cognitive, and is also willing to help your 13-year-old go through a grieving process of what she feels like she's going to lose. Because, you know, once you really get into the feelings of, here's what I feel like I'm going to lose, and I work through that, then I can start to look at, but here's the upside. And here are some things that I can still do and be happy about those. But you got to get through the grief part before those can be enjoyed. So hold on. And if we can help you find a therapist, we'd be happy to, because you want to be sure that you get a really good one and somebody that really understands a 13-year-old mind, which, of course, is a 16-year-old mind. And a half of it's 16 years old, and the other half of a 13-year-old is an 11-year-old mind. It's just crazy the way it works like that at that particular age. But let me send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids. I think you're going to really, really find that to be helpful. And then a little book on how to get on with things. I think you can read it and share some stuff with her. Take your life back, and I hope that will be a blessing to you. 1-800-229-3000. That's the phone number, 1-800-229-3000. You can find out about all of the things that we do. Now, if there's something we don't have and you have to go to Amazon and shop, be sure that you use smile.amazon.com. That's where you designate a ministry to benefit from your, doesn't cost you anything, but they send a portion of it to a charity, the charity of your choice, and we are full of charity here, so please do that. It'll help us. A little bit goes a long way when it's added to all the other people that are shopping on Amazon that listen to us. We've really benefited from this greatly, so please do, and that's Amazon, smile.amazon.com. All right, let's, how about we talk with, over here with Carrie, Fort Worth, Texas, listening online. Hey, Carrie, how are you today? And how could we help?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
I have a little dilemma here, and my stepdad really crossed a boundary yesterday.
Ooh.
And I'm wondering if I should, if my husband and I, if we should confront him on this or just let it go.
Okay, what boundary did he cross?
Well, we bought a house that is in the same town as my mom and stepdad to get closer to them. Mm-hmm. And we've been working on it for about a month now, and there has been a safe in the house that when we got it, it was bolted onto the floor in the closet. And so we've talked about it. We didn't have anything to open it, but my stepdad said I had the tool to open it. And so we've been working. He's been helping us, you know, do some repairs and stuff on mm-hmm. the house. And he said that he would open it for us, you know, but since I've been working on the house, I haven't pushed about it. But I mentioned the other day, like, when are we going to open the safe? There could be like $10,000 in there. And so they were working. But anyways, yesterday when we went to the house, my stepdad was there, and he was like, hey, I opened that safe. He got into the safe, and he had this tool, and it looks like it was a real job to get into the safe.
Mm-hmm.
But he got into it and opened it, and there were things in the safe. And he said, hey, there was $10,000 in there. And, I mean, I was shocked at first, like, oh, my gosh, because I wasn't expecting that. And we just walked in, and he was like, I opened that safe. And he showed us this cashier's check that was in the safe. This is one of other things that was in there. And it's an uncashed cashier's check for $10,800.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so, of course, my mind is like going on to that. The person that lived in the house before had passed away a couple of years earlier, and he had Alzheimer's. And so his family had gotten everything out of the house, and the house had actually been empty for like 3 years, but they didn't get everything out of the house until the day of closing, like 2 months ago. I mean, a month ago when we closed. But anyways, they left that safe, and then he opened it up when we were not there, and this cashier's check was there. And so when I was there, my mind was on that cashier's check, like, oh my goodness, can this still be cashed? And, you know, I was thinking about that, but later on, my husband and I got to talking because the other things in the safe was this. There were some other things, but the thing that bothers us is there were two bank bags that were empty. However, there was a deposit slip in one that was stamped by the bank, and it had these checks written on it to deposit, and they totaled $18,000 and something dollars. And then it said less cash of $10,000, and the deposit was $8,000. And something dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then there was an envelope with it, and it had written on the envelope $8,500, and
okay.
then that was scratched through, and then $8,000 was written.
Okay, tell me what you think. You got to get to the end of this. Tell me what you think he did. He took $8,000 or what?
The envelope was empty.
Yeah.
The envelope was empty, but it had $7,000 then written on it, and we got to thinking, like, was there actually cash in there?
Uh-huh.
And he took it, and so he opened it without us being there, and that just seems weird that there's cash bags in there.
So
in
the question
envelope.
For us is going to be what?
okay, we're starting to have a little bit of hard feelings, and my husband's like wanting to confront him about it and ask him why he opened it without us being there, and was there any cash in it? And at first I said, well, that won't do any good. He'll just deny it, and then everyone will have hard feelings. But the more I think about it, I'm thinking I want to confront him too.
Yeah. So we'll give you some help on that after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. We're hearing a case about an opened safe and money, cashier's check in there. And so I'm just going to start with you, Mylon, on the things that we talked about at the break that need to be considered here.
Well, Carrie, it doesn't seem to us as though he crossed a boundary. He announced all along, and you guys either tacitly or at some level agreed, you know, he said, I'll get the safe open for you. Of course, nobody knowing what's in there. Does your stepfather have other ways where he has created distrust in the family? Is he distrustful as a person in his character?
Well,
isn't that a great question? See, is it all adding up, or is this a weird thing? Yeah.
Well, he comes across as, well, that's kind of hard to get into, but like.
And Carrie, you may not like him.
He does.
You know, he's a stepdad. You may not like him in some way.
I do like him.
Okay, that's good.
The thing is that he and my mom, they don't have much money, and they do seem to use people for their money.
Okay.
And, you know.
Well, I think.
And so.
I think we're in agreement that the issue isn't that you crossed a boundary, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you didn't object to him opening the safe when he
right.
talked about
well,
opening
no,
it
I didn't
or
object.
Specify.
We all knew that he was going to open it, but
yeah.
I didn't think that we had to say, like, don't open it until, you know, unless we're
of course,
here.
Of course you wouldn't. But
like,
that's an assumption that you have,
yeah,
Carrie,
but,
that he didn't have.
Right, right. And had there been no money in it, it wouldn't have been a big deal. He's working on the house. He was going to get the safe open for you. So I think there was some lack of clarity there between you all, and that's why I'm not thinking it's a boundary issue.
Yeah, and then Steve had a great point.
But I would never go into his home. I would never go into his home, even if it's been discussed, because if there is something in it, I would want to avoid this very thing. You know,
okay, but we're beyond that.
I would want to.
We're beyond that. Now,
yeah,
the other thing Steve was bringing up as we were talking is really then who does this money belong to? It really
right.
belongs to the family, you know, that the person with Alzheimer's,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that's another issue. So I think personally, and Steve, you can, and Jill, I like your opinions mm-hmm. too. I would just simply ask him, you know, can we trust you that what's here is here? And I'm asking you if all of what we see is all of what we see.
Well, right, because you want to perhaps call the other family and let them know what was in the safe, and you don't want to, you know, there to be any discrepancy, right? Like if
sure,
I mean although
yeah, that's what
doubtful
was going
they
through
knew.
My mind too, I'm like because I'm like thinking all of a sudden the same thing. It's like, yeah, even this cashier's check. I'm like, we should call them and let them know about it, you know.
Now,
even,
I didn't hear that when we were talking to you on the other side of the break. Is that something that you and your husband have agreed? We ought to see if we could give this money back.
Well, we have talked about, is it able to be cashed? And we've talked about that. And it's even, you know, this was just kind of thrown
okay.
on us, I guess. It's been there for a month.
Okay, I have a reason for asking you this, so just hang in here with me a little bit. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. You and your husband need to decide if you think that if it was your house that you had sold and your dad mm-hmm. was in the house that sold, and because he had Alzheimer's, there's about $18,000 worth in cashier's check in cash. If you'd kind of like
know.
A, oh, you, what would you want to know?
Right.
But wouldn't you want the money back? Wouldn't you want
yes.
them to say, hey, you forgot to take this out of the house? And so you and your husband
Definitely.
Need to figure out what you want that money to go to before you figure out whether or not you can cash the cashier's check. Because it's one thing.
Oh, well, I know that we can't cash it.
It's
but
one thing to say,
it,
mm-hmm. it's one thing to say to him, there's a cashier's check that we think we need to give back to the people that own the house. There's an envelope that says $7,000. It looks like $7,000 was in it, and we'd like to give that back too. That's one thing versus we're going to try to see if we can cash the $10,000 check and keep it, and we'd like to know if you took
oh.
the $7,000 that we want. And I just think you have to ask him, was there $7,000 or $8,000 in cash in the envelope that went along with the cashier's check? Because that's what the deposit slips look like. That's what it looks like mm-hmm. here. There was some cash there. You have to ask him out front, up front. I don't think it's a boundary thing. I think
yeah.
you have to ask. Yeah, now, look, it says this here. Here's the cashier. Here's the rest. And here's the envelope. I think you have to ask him.
Yeah. We're not accusing you of anything. We're just wanting to make sense of this so we know what to tell the family.
And the reason you have to ask him is when it comes to money, he's not a man of pure integrity there. He and his wife tend to use people. So it's
yeah.
part of a character flaw mm-hmm. in that area. So my advice to you...
So I think that he wouldn't tell me the truth, I don't think, if he did.
What about
so,
your mom, Carrie? Would
yeah.
she tell you the truth? Because if he took
if
it, she probably
it,
knows.
Right. If she knew about it, she wasn't there, but if she knew about it, I would think that she would tell me.
We'll be back right after this.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the Transformation Welcome Gift, which includes a personal-sized Life Recovery Bible, a Life Recovery Journal, and 5 Life Recovery Workbooks. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life Video Library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that it, not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. I know of families that you would think they were as tight and connected and loving as they could possibly be, and then the issue of money comes up, and
yeah.
everything
yep.
falls
mm-hmm.
apart, and pretty soon now they're suing each other and all this kind of stuff. So when it comes to a relative like this that doesn't have a good history with ethics and money, I think you need to ask. And then the other thing is I think you need to get back to that estate or somebody and see if you could return the safe with the cash that your stepdad took. I mean, no, if he did take it, then it goes back in.
Steve, I can't believe you said that.
No.
You know, Carrie really is, and her husband really are in a difficult situation.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. And so I empathize. And how to handle it, simple questions, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so, but I would, again, if I were you, I would absolutely lay it out. Here's what we see here, and we're wondering if that money was there.
Last thing, I would talk to mom and dad together at the same
and
time.
I did like
that's
idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, to have him there. I wouldn't single him out. I'd make sure mom and dad are there because, you know.
Watch body language.
Yeah.
And of course, if you hadn't called us and I'd heard about this, this would have been in some novel or movie because it's really, really a great, great story. Wish we could have been more helpful to you. I'll send you a copy of How We Love, all about relationships between parents and the ones they raise and how that plays out over a lifetime. And I hope that that's going to help you there. Let's go to Larry Sonnenberg. He is in the studio. And Larry, we're just talking about finances, and I forgot to ask her if they cashed the $10,000 check and it was good, would they tithe that to New Life? I wish I had done that. I might have had a different answer.
I wanted to ask if that check was made out to New Life.
Yeah,
that's right. God works in mysterious ways. I'm so glad you called us. Anyway, what's going on with you and how are we doing?
It's been a while since we really pushed for Club New Life a little bit harder than normal. We ask for gifts all the time. Club New Life has really brought us through this pandemic in a solid way. And year end is coming. I'm expecting and hoping that people will make their normal year end gifts as we come into December, just a couple weeks away. But I want people to think about we were always telling you what you will get if you join Club New Life. Here's the thank you gift, here's the benefits. But there's two real benefits we don't talk about enough. One is what it does to you as a giver. If you're not giving, giving does something to you. It changes you. It's such a positive emotion to give and to feel a part of something. And then when you give to Club New Life, you're giving to others. We get to do what we do. We get to do this radio program, workshops, our council referral service, resources, all these things we get to do because people are giving financially. And when you do it month after month, it makes a big difference.
Sure does.
So you'll get the satisfaction of being part of something bigger than yourself. And that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Paul said he wrote to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 9:11, "You'll be enriched in every way for your great generosity." Now, that doesn't mean necessarily you're going to get financial gain because you gave a gift to us. But emotionally and spiritually, you'll be enriched. You'll understand. You really understand when you do it, when you make the gift. You start to understand that emotional and spiritual strength that comes to you. So that's my appeal. Please consider joining Club New Life. It makes a difference in your life, others' life, and New Life's life.
So. Well, there is a promise that goes with giving that the Lord will return to you. And this isn't a financial promise, but you know, just multiple benefits of blessing and joy to you. And again, not necessarily financial, but I think it changes everything. And it's very hard to be depressed and generous at the same time. So grateful for the things that you have that you want to share and give back to the Lord. So if you are moved by this and you think it's important, you call us at 1-800-229-3000 to be on the program, but 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you can help us, or call or go to newlife.com. So it's 800-NEW-LIFE, newlife.com.
Last word, Steve, is thank you to Club New Life members, current Club New Life members.
Can't say
thank you enough. And to those current Club New Life members, think about increasing your monthly gift, $5, $10, whatever. I'll let you guys go get back.
That would help greatly. All right. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate that. 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you can help us or if you need help, and then also newlife.com. Right now, let's go to Douglas calling from Denver, Colorado. And he listens on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Douglas, how are you today? What's going on?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, sir?
Excellent. What's happening?
I'm curious on. I've had multiple conversations with lots of people about cannabis / marijuana, and I'm curious if you have a biblical approach that is different than what I've heard. Thus far, I've not heard a solid biblical stance on why it is wrong.
Hmm. And you like cannabis and you need some biblical justification or what? What are you thinking?
No, it's not. I'm writing a book about it, and I'm trying to cover all my bases. I don't want to miss anything. And I've had lots of conversations, and every argument that I have heard is actually taking scripture out of context. It's this or that. It's not a solid argument. So I'm curious if you guys have any different than what I've heard elsewhere.
Okay,
so,
and are we talking about adults, or are we talking about teenage?
Well, yeah, we're talking about adults. We're not,
okay.
I mean, there's...
People over the age of 26?
You're drawing a pretty solid line. I'm not sure what the age of 26. I mean, I know there's studies, adolescent brain development.
Right.
Isn't fully done until your early to mid-20s. So, I mean, yeah, I think that it's wise to stay away from it until that point. But that's also, I mean, if someone is old enough to vote, if they're old enough to go to war, they should be old enough to be able to make that decision for themselves.
Right, absolutely. But at the same time, the brain development stuff is important, and that's the reason why I would say that. Exactly what you said.
Okay, so because...
They have that choice, but it's good to note that.
Right. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you shouldn't go into anything without being educated in it.
Right.
But that's also not... myself, I'm in my 40s, and I live where it's obviously legal here in Colorado. And I once upon a time, I smoked years and years ago when I was young, and then God spun my life around. I have a relationship with God. I'm not one that just goes to church and checks it off my list. I walk with God. But when I quit smoking cannabis when I was in my early 20s, that was in a state where it was illegal, and that was why I quit. And I remember that very definitively. That was the conviction, was because it's illegal and it hurts your witness. Then I moved to Colorado, and things changed, and at some point I started using it again. And over that eight-year period of not ever touching it, I had plenty of time to do research and dig into the Word and dig into what is actually what it's about. And thus far, I've not had anybody give me a solid scriptural reason.
Okay. So there is a concept, you could say, of just making responsible decisions. That's what we're told to do, and not everything is in the Bible that's okay to do, and not everything is in the Bible that's not okay to do. Wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, nowhere.
I would agree with that, but on that same note, would you agree that the Bible covers all major controversial topics that are necessary to cover?
Conceptually, we can apply principles to everything, biblical truth to everything, but it's not necessarily as everything mentioned in scripture to give us a definite yes or no. But we'll go to break. When we come back, we'll try to give you some insights on this particular dilemma. By the way, do you know of statistics there in Colorado, how things are going since they legalized it? Does it seem like it's been a good thing?
I'm aware of some statistics, but, I mean, on that same note, if you want to talk about statistics, you could talk about alcohol and, well, where there is...
No, I was just talking about marijuana. We'll be back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. Glad you're with us here today. Mylon Yurkovich, Dr. Jill Hubbard. We are talking with Douglas here from Denver, Colorado, wanting to know what our thoughts are from a biblical perspective on marijuana. Mylon, you want to start, and Jill, I'll finish up, or yeah, whatever.
Sure. Three things, Douglas. Number one, the Bible says that nothing should master you, that nothing should have a level of prominence that it is the driver or something you obsess or you're compelled to do. You know, so it could that could include a lot of things, Douglas. It's not just pot. It's anything that masters us versus us choosing what we want to do. Number two, a lot of people that smoking pot are really trying to make anxiety go away. And it is used by many people as an anti-anxiety treatment, which is for really temporary, because as soon as you wake up the next day or several hours later, they're anxious again. So they just keep smoking pot as a way to mitigate their internal angst.
And long term, for some people, it ends up creating the very anxiety they're trying to calm.
It can.
For some people.
And absolutely, Jill, for some people, it absolutely escalates their anxiety.
Right.
And it's a really serious problem. The other thing that has a really profound impact on a family is we know that marijuana lowers a person's drive to engage, to pursue, to press, to move into their highest potential as a husband, as a father, as an employee. You know, I grew up in the 60s, okay? So I've been around pot for now 40, 50, 60 years to observe it. That's not something I've ever been drawn to. But I know a lot of people that have used pot, but they have failed to grow and become the people that God really wants them to be because they're constantly in a state of sedation. Mm-hmm. And when you're under a constant state of sedation or a frequent state of sedation, you are not listening to the Holy Spirit. You're not listening to God. You're not, you know, and your personal drive is really going to be lacking. And I've, again, seen it many, many times. Jill, what do you think?
Well, I would just echo that. Those were some of my thoughts, too, that we are not to be controlled by anything, or things are not supposed to become an idol, and that can be many things. And so I realized, Douglas, that that's a broad approach, and it can be very individual from person to person.
So, Douglas,
okay.
There is, with marijuana, as with alcohol, for many, they don't just drink because they like the taste of red wine. They drink because they need or desire the mood to be altered. Does anyone
right.
ever smoke marijuana where the mood is not altered? I don't think so. And so also, you know, we want to do things that bring us together with people, not separate us. So that's a principle. And then also, we know that for some, it is absolutely wrong for them. Absolutely wrong. There's no question it's wrong. Because it does destroy their ability to be rational. It also reignites the addiction or obsession, compulsion, spark within them, and it's marijuana today, and then they're back drinking the choice, their whiskey that they really loved. So there are some people, it's wrong. When something does come to own us, when we hear about demotivational syndrome, that's not something that was a myth in the 60s. We hear about it all the time. People, young people, not making it in college, smoking pot, now living in the basement or in the room where the penance are still hanging on the wall. That's
everything you guys have said and are still okay. So yes, it is wrong for some people. But
yeah.
On that same note, if someone was a fishing addict and God convicted them of spending all their time on the lake, and they quit fishing. Now, fishing is wrong for them. Does that mean the rest of us should never fish?
No, it doesn't mean that at all. So what I'm saying is, anybody that's trying to make a case that marijuana is okay, well, that's kind of short-sighted, because for some people it is absolutely not okay, even though it's legal. I would say this. I've never met a successful marijuana smoker. I've never met anybody that smoked it for 10, 15 years saying, my life is the quality life I've been looking for.
Steve Jobs smoked marijuana.
What's that?
Steve Jobs smoked marijuana. And I think we can all agree he was successful. Elon Musk smoked marijuana.
Yeah.
And I think we can agree that he was successful.
Wait a second. They made a lot of money, but I think both of those guys might have some problems in the air personal relationship. Just because you make money doesn't make you successful.
I'm really
glad that you called us, because I think it gets everybody thinking, mm-hmm. why does somebody make such a big deal out of something that literally has, I mean, there are parents right now listening, there are wives and husbands both listening, saying, this thing has really, really hurt us. So I would just say, for those that it is absolutely wrong, there is no legislation, there is no justification to ever return to it. And if you have a proclivity or a propensity to do things to excess, I would just avoid it absolutely like the plague. But I think the key verse here is this verse in 1 Corinthians. I think that's where it is, 1 Corinthians 6:12, not to be brought under the power of anything. All right. I'll send you a copy of Take Your Life Back if you'd like it. 1-800-229-3000. We're usually a radio program about personal, relational issues and not the justification of any particular behavior.
But you know what, Steve? It's interesting about that discussion with Douglas, and he had some good questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a theological question, which is what he was asking mm-hmm. about. It's also philosophical, and it's also medical and neurological. So mm-hmm. there's all these and relational, you know,
right.
All these different ranges and aspects of this discussion. It's just not a simple discussion. And as Douglas said, you know, you can take positions anywhere on all this, and it'll go just like this call, not into any final place in, mm-hmm. in Douglas's mind. He was looking for just something to say, no, you can't do this from the Bible.
Or yes, you can.
That's exactly right.
But also, you don't know what's going on in a person's life, and just because they use something doesn't mean they... I mean, Steve Jobs might have used it, wished he could get off of it and couldn't. I mean, you just don't know kinds of... 1-800-229-3000.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.